Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly vigorous, relentless, and many times ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting from the very well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. My pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you all. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. And I'm just a free man trying to stay afloat in the sea of communism. Encourage you to be part of the show tonight with your comments in the chat or your comments on the MeWe Well Armed Radio page. Or you can call 563-999-3787. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And jump right into it tonight because I'm a little bit late getting in to the broadcast. But Kentucky Derby weekend here in southeast Wisconsin, at least, we had, it was a cold day Friday. I was down at the marina on Friday. And when I say the marina, I'm talking about the warehouses where my boat's kept. It's a dry stack marina. They got a few slips. I mean, there's a marina there, but it's mostly warehouses where they put the boats in and out with big lifts. And 45 degrees when I got down there on Friday. That was on the lake. Came back, played golf in the afternoon. Still chilly. I think I went and played at Nagawaki. I want to say it was like 55 degrees there. So it was like 10 degrees difference, maybe a tick warmer, maybe 56, 57. So just a tick warmer in the Pewaukee, Delafield area. And then Friday night, super chilly, like it was in the upper 30s, maybe mid 30s. And then Saturday, boom, we get this southern wind, and they said it was going to happen, but I mean, it was mid 80s. I think it was 84 on the Allen Bradley Clock Tower. So we take the boat out on Saturday, but it was crazy windy. Man, I tell you, it was, the wind was one thing. I think they said 20 to 30 mile per hour winds gusting to 40. So the wind was one thing, but it was just, man, the dust and the pollen in the air. Holy shit. All the trees are dropping their pollen right now. So, I mean, you take that and then you throw 30 mile per hour winds gusting to 40. And I mean, we get down to I cleaned the boat on Friday on land. They put it in with, they hung it Saturday morning early. They hang it over the well with the big travel lift. And then, so it's outside for a few hours before I get there. So in a few hours before I got there, the boat was kind of, you know, a little bit of dust on it down there in the harbor district. They're doing construction across the way for the new Komatsu building right across the KK River from Skipper Bud's marina facility. And so then we, you know, get going kind of as we're heading out down the KK River to go out onto the outer harbor, dust off the boat again, take a little trip around, smack a big log. It was a big timber. Did no damage to the boat, not even a scratch, but I'm going along as I hear a toot, and I was like, ooh, that sounded weird. And turns out that I look behind me and I see this timber. It's like one of those, I don't know, about the size of a header, solid piece of wood, but probably like a, I don't know, like a 4 by 12 by 12. And, but something that you could tell had been in the water for quite a long time. Went back and took a look at where my prop hit it, lower unit slash prop hit it. It just shattered. So it was pretty soft. So, you know, didn't do, like I said, no, not even a scratch, not even a ding on the propeller. So got lucky there. But so we tool through McKinley, pull in by Discovery World, and we drop anchor because we're going to, I need the generator on the boat runs off diesel, and I haven't, you know, used it in a while. It has some gas from last year in there, some diesel. So I want to run through that and get it burned up and put some new diesel in there. So anyway, we drop the hook in the little cove by Discovery World, right by Lake, between Discovery World and Lakeshore State Park. And man, it's just blowing and blowing. And fortunately, I got a good set on the hook because, man, that anchor was set. But it, and maybe I'm just, I haven't got the expertise down or something. Maybe I put out too much road because you want to get a really good angle on your anchor line. Because if you're too steep, it's like fishing with your anchor and you'll pull it right out of the bottom. So, but maybe I have too much out to where the boat just swings back and forth on the axis of the anchor line. And so we're sitting there, I mean, we're going to watch the Kentucky Derby out there. So I got the TV going. My boat has three TVs. Got the one in the cabin cockpit going. And I don't know if it's just from the movement, but the TV wasn't coming in good. It was freezing every few seconds. It's a digital TV. So, which is probably from the movement and it just, so we were there for probably an hour and a half on the hook. And I'm like, hey guys, look, I mean, my daughter was starting to get seasick from the swinging back and forth. It was super hot and that didn't help. And so we pulled anchor and went and docked over at Discovery World's docks and hung out there for the rest of the afternoon, which was better than the boats not swinging back and forth. Still super, super windy. And again, all the pollen and dust in the air, about, you know, 5, 6 o'clock, we go to take a little walk. The Kentucky Derby was over. Didn't win. Well, actually, I take that back. My fiance won. She had, we bet the horses on Friday night. We used to just bet amongst the family. Not really bet. We just pick our horses and have a little contest with the family. Like whoever wins gets to pick where we go to dinner or something like that. But this year we bet for real. I have an account on Twin Spires, just to make it fun and interesting. And, I go with Mark Belling's picks and those were losers. I don't think any of his horses even placed. Maybe one of his horses that he had in his top six placed, but he had a long shot that he thought could win the race. And I think, I don't know what it went off at. Maybe it went off at 35 to 37 to 1 or 40, It was at 45-1 at one point. Oh, Bezos. So that's the one that I bet to win. Put $100 on that one. Put $200 on Midnight Bourbon, which was another long shot. Midnight Bourbon wasn't as much of a long shot, but that one, I mean, and then I just to cover, I put $50 on Essential Quality, who was the favorite. Glad he didn't win. That's some Arab owns that. Some of the rulers in, I don't know, Dubai or something. And but yeah, I would just call it a boring race. I just call it boring because I didn't win. It was exciting for my fiance. Her horse won. And so broke about even. I mean, I think total we bet $500-$600 in the race and broke even at the end of the day. So I think the Preakness is coming up next. So we'll just roll the money into that race and maybe we'll do a little better there. And if Obezo would have come in, that would have been like I forget what the odds were when it went off. I think it would have been a $100 bet, a $4,500 payoff. So that would have been nice. Would have put gas in the boat for a weekend. So anyway, we're running short on time here, so we'll get into it. First thing I saw tonight, or I saw this past week, you know, there was a story on WISN, and it might have been a few other places too, but so there's St. Mary's School is in Hales Corners. I know this school because it's part of the same diocese that my kids went to. They went to St. Matthias, but the St. Mary's in Hales Corners was in their little regular rotation of teams they played for sports. There was St. Mary's, there was, I don't need to list them all, but anyway, that was one of the local schools that they would play. So we've been to St. Mary's Hales Corners quite a bit. And for anybody who doesn't know, I mean, Hales Corners is, I mean, it's, I don't even know if I call it a city suburb. It's slightly disconnected. I mean, it's next to, it borders, I think, Greenfield and Franklin. So it's not like a bordering, you know, Greenfield touches Milwaukee in spots. West Dallas touches Milwaukee. Or does it touch? No, yeah, West Dallas touches Milwaukee and West Milwaukee. I mean, Hales Corners, it's separate. It's a nice little community. I mean, it's not, you know, Highway 100 runs through it. I've got a couple big, on the south end of Highway 100, they got a couple big car dealerships down there. But other than that, I mean, it's a pretty, you know, middle class kind of place, upper middle class kind of place. So it's not, you know, it's not a rough area. And so here, there's a woman was carjacked at gunpoint while waiting to pick up her kids from school. Now I know Hales Corners, I know St. Mary's School. They pick up their kids on school property. I forget the name of the road that goes, I don't know if it's Edgerton Avenue that goes past the school. And then there's another, it's right at the crossroads of Edgerton and something. I forget what the other crossroads was. But not to say that parents can't wait on one of the streets. They may, but I mean, the regular pickup, there's a little loop that they go, because there's no buses for Catholic schools. There's no buses. So you pull onto the school parking lot, which is just also the playground, and they've got their little protocol of how you're supposed to pull it out. So it's on school property. And this mother is carjacked at gunpoint last week in Hales Corners. And the thing, when I see this, we've said forever, and I've gotten many contacts from mothers across Milwaukee who say, you know, I want to be armed when I go to pick up my kids from school for this exact reason, because I'm worried about getting carjacked. And here we go. It happens not even in Milwaukee. And it may have happened in Milwaukee, but this one is out in the suburbs. A mother is carjacked at gunpoint. Now, I don't know if the mother was a concealed carry license holder. I don't know if she would have been armed if not for the gun-free school zone. But I do know that there are mothers who want to be armed when they pick up their kids at school. And so in the listing for tonight's show, I put, you know, the Scott Walker, Robin Voss, Scott Fitzgerald, Second Amendment light gift that keeps on giving. Here we go with a problem where it's the law that's keeping people from protecting themselves. And again, I don't know this woman. I didn't find her name on the news. I don't know. I didn't see it there. She may or may not have been a concealed carry license holder. She may or not have been someone that would have been carrying. But again, I do know there are women who want to carry when they pick up their kids from school because they've contacted me. And they've brought up the point that, hey, can we do something about this? Senator Craig, who's no longer Senator Craig. I think he's like last year of law school student Craig, or maybe he's graduated. But he had introduced Senate Bill 169 back in, I'm stretching here, maybe that was 2017, maybe it was 2018. But at that point, we had a we had a Republican majority in the Assembly, we had a Republican majority in the Senate, and we had Scott Walker in the governor's seat. So it had to be 20, I think, I want to say it might have been, it was introduced late 2017 and then had the potential still until the session ended in 2018, because I want to say that it was Black Friday 2017 where I drove all around Scott Fitzgerald's district dropping off the yard signs, it was the Free Families from Felonies Fitz, what do we call that thing? Not a mission. Free Families from Felonies. That was it. Operation Free Families from Felonies Fitz, where we had these red and white signs all around Scott Fitzgerald's district because Senate Bill 169 was passed out of committee years prior. It got killed in Van Wanguard's committee, and we put the pressure on him, and he got called out for it. And so Van Wanguard ushered it through his committee in either late 2017 or it was early 2018. I can't remember exactly when it was. I think it was late 2017. Because I want to say that the public hearings took place summer of 2017, if memory serves. So sat there waiting for Scott Fitzgerald. It sat at Scott Fitzgerald's desk waiting for him to introduce the bill to the floor. Rumor has it, it was a vote or two short. But when a bill has a vote or two short, it's that close. That's where you should be able to get the bill passed with a little bit of effort by leadership. Scott Fitzgerald brags about his A-plus rating from the NRA. The A-plus rating for the NRA says that to get the A-plus rating, you don't just have to have a legislative record supporting gun bills, gun legislation, with good votes in whatever elected office you're holding, whether that's, you know, Senate, Assembly, Governor, whatever. But you also have to actively work to promote pro-gun legislation. So to have that A-plus NRA rating, Scott Fitzgerald really should have, to earn it, been willing to go, and again, I think Alberta Darling was one of them, go to Alberta Darling and say, look, Alberta, we need your vote on this. We're going to call it for a vote. I understand it's going to put pressure on you. Alberta's kind of squishy on the gun rights issue, but we're going to vote this, and this is an important bill, and we need your support on it. And I think she would have had to vote for it, and I think it would have passed, would have gone to the Assembly, and then the pressure would have been on Robin Voss. But what I heard directly from a legislator, and I won't tell you who, but from a legislator, that in the discussions with Robin Voss, Scott Walker, Scott Fitzgerald, the quote was, quote, we don't need this right now. That was the sentiment from Scott Walker, Robin Voss, and Scott Fitzgerald back when Senate Bill 169 had a chance. Senate Bill 169 would have allowed law-abiding parents with concealed carry licenses, the ability to carry on school grounds as per federal law, but Wisconsin's gun-free school zone statute is more strict than federal law. So that would have addressed this problem, this landmine that's sitting out there for mothers, fathers, guardians, anybody who might go on, you know, spectators for sporting events, anybody who might find themselves driving onto school grounds. We're walking on school grounds, taking a walk with the kids on Sundays, you know, go to the playground to use the school playground or soccer field or whatever. Felony. That's a felony. And again, I always say to people, how many other constitutionally enumerated rights, because, you know, rights are boundless, contrary to what Joe Biden says. But how many other constitutionally enumerated rights, Bill of Rights enumerated rights, can you accidentally, while exercising, accidentally commit a felony? You can't accidentally commit a felony while you're giving a speech. You know, you can create a tort, a civil, you know, you could say something during a speech, you could say something inaccurate, while you're exercising your freedom of speech. You could say something inaccurate that could get you sued. If it, you know, if you said, you know, the, but again, I don't even know if that would be, that's not even really an accident because you don't accidentally say something. I mean, I suppose maybe someone tells you something and then it's, and it turns out that that was wrong. And you said, so it was inaccurate information, you know, you get sued for libel. I mean, I suppose you could accidentally, but, school grounds. I mean, you forget to unload and encase your weapon driving onto school grounds. You can accidentally commit a felony. Do not pass go. I mean, that's, you're going to jail. I mean, you're going to lose, if you get convicted of that felony, you're going to lose your Second Amendment rights. You're going to have a felony record. You're not going to be able to own firearms. Again, something that could have been addressed and wasn't. And it wasn't the Democrats. Don't blame the Democrats for that one. Blame Scott Walker, Robin Voss, and Scott Fitzgerald that moms are getting can be carjacked. And that's the thing. If you're a carjacker, I mean, what better place to go do it than in a school, on a school grounds? You know, they're probably unarmed. I mean, some people probably break that law. They say, you know, rather be, what's the saying? Rather be carried by six, or rather be judged by 12 than carried by six. So, again, the gift of Scott Walker, Robin Voss, and Scott Fitzgerald's squishy, not so pro-gun attitudes a few years back continues to come back to bite us in the ass here in Wisconsin. Another topic tonight let's start with this one. I got an email from a Wisconsin Carry member. Wisconsin Carry's annual mailing started going in the mail last week. If you're a member, you hopefully would have gotten yours by now. Our annual meeting is coming up on Sunday, May 16th in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin at the Isaac Walton League Clubhouse. Hope to see you all there. Have no idea what to expect for attendance. 2 years ago, we used to get around, I think our biggest ever was probably 250, 300 people when we were at the Dry Bean Saloon in Fitchburg several years back. I want to say that was 2010, several years, gosh, a decade, more than a decade. That's crazy. Just before concealed carry passed, we had great attendance at that because everybody was super hyper interested in concealed carry. But then we typically get, you know, about 100, you know, we had it at John's restaurant in Beaver Dam 1 year. I think probably got about 100 people. A couple of years we've had it at the Culver's in Edgerton. I think twice we've had it there, 75, you know, people-ish, maybe. We had it at Serb Hall 1 year. I don't remember what year that was, maybe 2011, 2012. We had 1,000 people there for that concealed carry class. We did a concealed carry class right after. We doubled up the annual meeting and then the concealed carry class right after. I don't remember how many people were there for the annual meeting, but I remember the concealed carry class was a huge one. And then Tyrol Basin, the ski hill, we had a concealed carry class there, and we had the annual meeting just prior to a concealed carry class there one day. And then trying to think other places we've had. We had it in Madison 1 year, I think 2009. We had it at Gander Mountain in Madison. 1 year we had it at Roma's Pizza in East Troy, Roma's Pizza Place, another place that hosts free concealed carry classes for us. Don't remember what year that was. Think in 2013-ish. So, yeah, we've been around. I had it in the Dells 1 year at – I'm not going to remember the name of this restaurant. Yeah, the name of the restaurant isn't coming to me, but which is unfortunate because I'd like to give them a shout-out. But a restaurant up in the Dells that a bunch of pro-gun people that, yeah, it's just not coming to that restaurant up in the Dells. So, yeah, so we've had it, you know, various parts of the state. We've had it at the Isaac Walton League Clubhouse before as well. So it'll be nice to get back there. So May 16th, put in your calendars if you can make it. Awesome. Might try to Zoom it. Might try to put it to stream the annual meeting for people that want to check in from virtually. We'll see if we can get that to work. But here's an email I got today from someone who just got the annual mailing. I'm not going to say the person's name because I didn't ask for them permission to, and I don't think it's important, but I thought I'd share this sentiment. It's not personal information. It says, "Hi, Nick, I recently got my renewal letter and I read about your ban from Facebook. I was hoping to share a few thoughts with you, both of support and constructive criticism. I believe all good men need to strive to do what is right, yet take moments to reflect, learn, and embrace being better versions of themselves. A community around each man helps mix support and criticism in such a way to build a stronger one out of each of us. I hope you can appreciate, even if you don't agree with all of my thoughts. Well, here we go. Bit of a background. Maybe I won't say this because that's personal information. I mean, that doesn't narrow it down. But I've been watching what Facebook has been doing for years, screaming alarms to people which have fell on deaf ears. Don't put so much identifying information on there, or they're abusing their contractors and censors or anything else like that. The fact is, a lot of the censorship or moderation is done by contractors who have no real training. There's a lot wrong with the moderation system, and you may have fallen victim to that. Unfortunately, these are not public utilities, even though people have taken to trust them as they are. This is some of the consequence we all pay for ignoring people like me years ago. But that's not the point. The point is that there are still a lot of good things that groups of people on Facebook have done and can do. Many people have made long lost connections with parents, sponsored charity events, found organs for donation, many uplifting stories. Then, as the world has changed, I believe Facebook fell behind on building proper community structures because of the money that they received in ads. They've lost their way. I don't have children, but I was a child and I was a real jerk. I challenged my parents, told them I hated them. I don't recall them ever calling me names, though. They sometimes yelled, sure, but they were more disappointed than aggressive. I think we should adopt this type of attitude towards companies like Facebook. Be disappointed, but don't call them names. I was with you on your note until you started referring to them as fascist book. What does that help? We've become a society that is falling into the traps of righteous indignation and outrage, and I think language like this is just perpetuating that. Yeah, you can and should be upset, and I'm not saying be fake positive, but be constructive. Be supremely disappointed in a platform like fascist book, that's me saying it, he says Facebook, which has so much potential to do good for their cronies, for their choices. Sorry. Suggest people attempt to convince them of their mistakes, make voices heard, but don't call them names. Us true men are better than that. I know a man of good character like you can take the high road. You're fighting for our rights, and that's great. But even though you fall into the chasm of us versus them in your work, don't let this encroach into your communication, into your thoughts, into your life. We don't have to all be hippies, love everyone, etc., but us better men can disagree, win, and show them their mistakes with the decorum far above. We will win our fights because we are right, but even better, we will feel good about victory because we were upright and above reproach in the way that we conducted ourselves. That's who you are, right? Anyway, thank you for taking the time to listen to my rant. I believe in the work you're doing, and I hope you feel that me taking the time to share with you is the most respectful and encouraging way I can help to bring criticism. Have a great Sunday. So, you know, I like hearing from people. I like to hear people's perspectives. You got to categorize stuff that's handled, but I'm just going to say, like, to equate like your parents calling you names with me calling Facebook fascist book, that's just a huge stretch. And by a huge stretch, like trying to do the splits across town. I mean, seriously, Facebook isn't a person, and we need to stop treating it like a person who has feelings. Facebook is a corporation. Facebook is an entity. I'm well aware it's not a public entity, but it is, I believe, a monopoly. And I've shared this before on the show. It's a monopoly. It's got monopolistic behavior. When other social media things started to, in the realm of competition, which is competition is what solves problems in capitalism. When companies become too big, what did Facebook do? When Instagram became the fastest growing social media platform in the world, Facebook bought them. Facebook bought WhatsApp. I think that's what it was, a messaging thing. I mean, so I'm well aware that Facebook is a private company and they kind of sort of can do what they want in terms of example censorship, but they're also a monopoly. And I think that they should be addressed as such. For that reason, there's plenty of reason to think that Facebook needs some I'll say legal intervention. I believe they're a monopoly. I believe their practices are anti-competitive. I believe they violate the Sherman-Clayton. Was it the Sherman Antitrust Act, the Clayton? I forget that now. I used to know when my college days those exact acts, those exact statutes. But I don't feel a bit bad. And here's the thing. When I call Facebook fascist book, it's because that's exactly what they do. The term fits to a T. So be constructive for Facebook. How the fuck do you be constructive for fascist book? And to clarify, and I would say this to this person individually, this notion that maybe I was censored by mistake, suggested that might have been what happened to me. Might have been a mistake. No, it wasn't, because it wasn't done by a contractor. Senator Johnson's office reached out directly to Facebook and asked them why I was deplatformed. Facebook said, we can't share because that's personal information, but it wasn't a mistake. So just to clarify that point, this wasn't a contractor. This wasn't a whatever. Or even a low-level person at Facebook, this was intentional. I was deplatformed for a reason that they didn't even have the balls or the courage or the stones to tell me, or the principles to tell me why. So I've got to narrow down to a couple things. It was either because I posted things supportive of Kyle Rittenhouse, or because I on my Well Armed Radio page, I have a lot of anti-coronanoia stuff. Or this last one that I came up with is this years and years and years and years ago, I created a Facebook group called Wisconsin Minutemen. There's zero people in it. I'm the only member. But I created that back in, like, I don't know, 2010 maybe. And the thought behind it was it wasn't a militia group. It was the Wisconsin Minutemen was people who were committed to it might have even been before Wisconsin Carry. The Wisconsin Minutemen was people who were committed. They were ready to jump into action at a moment's notice to defend freedom. And by that, I meant calling a legislator, getting on the phone, Minutemen, the Minutemen from this that we had during the during the Revolutionary War. They were ready, in a minute. They could grab their musket, grab their uniform, whatever, pull their boots on and be ready in a minute. We used to be taught about them in elementary school. I don't know if public schools still teach it, but that was in public school. I don't know if public schools still teach about them anymore, but that was, so that's the other thing, is I had this group. There was nobody in it. The Wisconsin Minutemen, I think it still existed. I'm not positive. It had fallen so far down on my list. I mean, I've got the New Berlin Taxpayers Alliance that I admin. I've got Well Armed Radio. I've got Wisconsin Carry. The Wisconsin Minutemen was so far down that it didn't even show up as a link on my menu system, that I'd have to kind of probably go click into like other groups to see it. So I'd even forgotten that it was there. So perhaps that was it. Again, I'm just trying to figure out, or maybe, who knows, maybe they just, as the president of Wisconsin Carry, they wanted to target me and get me off. I don't know. I'm thinking it was one of those three things, but all this stuff, people have made long lost connections with parents, sponsored charity events, found organs for donation, many uplifting stories. Well, sure. And you know what? And if there was a competitive network, if Facebook fascist book wasn't such a monopoly, there would be competitive networks where you could do that same thing. So I'm not saying that Facebook was all bad. And in fact, I'm not even asking people to, I didn't ask a single person to boycott Facebook. I merely asked people to establish an alternative presence on MeWe, because until MeWe grows so fast that Facebook buys them up too, an alternative presence on another social media would do two things. First, it gives an alternative place to where there are privacy protections. And again, MeWe has privacy protections, but they could change those in a heartbeat. We know how this works. I mean, Amazon Web Services, Twitter, whoever, they seem to change their terms of service, their conditions, their community standards on a daily basis, and then deplatform people even when they don't break those. But I do think there's some potential civil exposure here as well, because just because you're a private company doesn't make you free from civil litigation. And to when there's people that have established businesses and income streams through Facebook, and then Facebook violates their own, invested a great deal of money. Hell, I've spent money on Facebook. I paid for Facebook ads with Wisconsin Carry and other. So, for then Facebook to turn around and say that, and for people to think the fascist book can just do whatever they want. No, that's not true either. So I really don't see, this person seems to be like their feelings are hurt because I called it fascist book. I think the term fits. And the reason that I call it fascist book is, one, because the term fits, and because of the, what do they call that? The alliteration, I think it is. Maybe that's not the right word. But the play on words. And because labeling it as fascist book is what you do when you're trying to, as a marketer, as a persuader, that's a tactic that you use. It's the same way that Trump, what did he call? He called him Little Marco, and when Trump was during the campaign, Little Marco Rubio. And there were some people that were put off by Trump's tactics. I wasn't. Supposedly some people. Well, certainly some people were. How many, I don't really know. But I'll be honest, I think for Trump, with what you got to put up with in the public, I don't want to say court of public opinion, but in the liberal media world, you got to be a little bit of a jerk. You got to be a little bit of a junkyard dog fight back type person. I'm so sick. We can't have this asymmetrical warfare. You can't have where we're supposed to be constructive. Well, let's encourage Facebook, which has so much potential to do good, for their choices. Be constructive. Be supremely disappointed in a platform like Facebook, which has so much potential to good for their choices. Suggest people attempt to also convince them of their mistakes. Make voices heard. How the fuck do you do that? You give me the phone number for Facebook. Again, I don't want to use this person's name. Give me the phone number for Facebook. Let me call them. Let me tell you can't. Facebook doesn't give a shit about your opinion. Facebook doesn't give a shit. Facebook knows exactly what they're doing. Facebook wasn't looking for opinions when it deplatformed conservatives. Facebook isn't looking for opinions when it – this is the mistake that this guy makes, is he thinks that Facebook has – morals. He thinks that the people that run Facebook have morals. Again, I've almost accidentally used this guy's name several times. I don't mean to do that. Mark Zuckerberg put, what did he put? $400 million towards stealing the election. These guys have no morals. You can't have a moral, you can't make a moral argument with moral-less people. And do I think Mark Zuckerberg is moral-less? Can't say, in truth, I can't say completely. But in terms of how he operates Facebook, yeah, I think the liberal progressive mindset is immoral on its basis. I think socialism is immoral. I think progressivism is immoral. It's rooted in immorality. And I'm not talking about same sex, sodomy or whatever. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about the immorality that those political belief systems rely on, taking stuff from others, usurping the fruits of other people's labor. So yeah, I mean, I don't know, this dude must have some kind of love fest with fascist book. And he doesn't want fascist book brought down, or he wants just to see it become a better place. Dude, wake the fuck up. Fascist book is out there to politically, that their intent is to be political. Their intent is to manipulate the public discourse. Their intent is to counter the conservative message, defeat the conservative message. So to sit here and play footsie with people that are trying to destroy you is, no, I won't do it. It's fascist book. I'm going to keep calling him fascist book. And in fact, I'm going to make sure to call him fascist book even more, because it offends people. If you're offended, good. And again, happy to listen. But, oh, this notion, I know a man of good character, like you could take the high road. Fuck the high road. I actually happen to think that, I mean, the high road, that's just another cliche, another platitude. But the high road is not sitting back and letting fascist book manipulate content, manipulate with their algorithms, censor any contrary public discourse to whether it's coronavirus. You know, here, I got one for you. Again, I almost said the guy's name. How immoral that fascist book and Twitter and others, but fascist book prohibited content from doctors, licensed medical doctors, about hydroxychloroquine, about ivermectin. Do you know how many people died because of what the liberals and platforms like fascist book? Because look, we're used to the media doing it. We're used to the media blackout. We've been dealing with that for years. But do you know how many thousands of people died who could have lived if it wasn't for what fascist book did when it came to hydroxychloroquine, when it came to some of the videos that came out early on from, you know, America's Frontline Doctors and others? So the high road, I'm sorry, but not calling out Facebook for who they are isn't taking the high road. And if I'd have thought about this a little longer, I might have a simile to throw back at you, what a characterization of what I think that really is. But Facebook is the low road. Facebook is the under, I can't call it the underclass. Facebook is the demonic, the people that run it. And obviously the people that populate it. Look, I mean, my family still has Facebook pages. You know, I'm well aware that people found long lost whoever. I'm well aware that I lost 12, 13 years of family photos and memories. Anyway, just some more, an email I got from a Wisconsin Carry member who probably won't hear that. that rant. Another listener email from a good friend, Tom. He said, non-gun topic question. What do you think about these proposals to forgive student debt? I am very, very opposed. I picked a reasonably priced state school, a good degree, not something useless like gender studies, had part-time jobs and worked hard to get good grades and get a good job afterwards. I paid off my loans in a few years by living within my means and making extra payments. I don't want to have to effectively pay off someone else's loans now too. Forgiving student loan debt is basically punishing those who are responsible and paid the debt that they agreed to. Another angle, why should anyone bother to save in 529 plans and such for their kids' educations anymore if Uncle Sam could just bail them out? Great question, great topic, Tom. So here's my thoughts. First of all, I don't think they'll really do it. I think that that's just a carrot that they keep dangling. It's kind of like immigration. Democrats never want to solve the immigration problem. Democrats don't want legal immigration because even a robust legal immigration system, Democrats need illegal immigrants to have a constituency to support them. If all the legal immigrants became legal, those legal immigrants don't need the Democrat platform because they're legal. Now, Republicans don't turn around and grant an amnesty and make them all legal because Democrats would then just get more people in here. We'd have to essentially give amnesty, not just everybody here, but everybody that wants to come in here. And our entitlement system can't handle that, nor can our country handle that influx. But the Democrats know that it's a perpetual issue that they can just make hay with. And I think that's what – I don't think Democrats would really want to – because, look, under Obama, Democrats had the House, the Senate. I want to even say they had veto. I can't remember. Didn't the Democrats – I can't remember if the Democrats had a veto-proof or a supermajority in the Senate. Maybe they didn't. I might be remembering wrong. But I remember the Democrats had the House, they had the Senate, and they had the presidency under Obama's first term, and they didn't go touch immigration. They didn't even go sniffing around it, and they could have. So I think it's a wedge issue. that so I think Democrats just keep wanting to tease it out there because they know it's a big issue for younger people. So they just keep teasing it out there to keep drawing support. But I don't think they would really do it. I don't think now if they really did. Oh, terrible idea. If the Democrats really did, it would just make the problem worse because, first of all, I don't know the mechanism by which they would do it. How do you forgive? Do they just forgive the debt, or because some of the debt is privately held? I'm not an expert. I never took a student loan. I did the same thing you did, Tom. Well, I think sometimes you said you had loans, but I didn't. I worked, and unfortunately, I had a really good job in college. I worked at a resort, and I made mega tips. I worked at a pro shop, and I innovated in a position that I had. I was the head card attendant. I was a card attendant at Lake Lawn Resort in Delavan at the golf course. It was a great job. The golf pro used to go to the high school and say to the high school golf coach, hey, I want your number one varsity golfer. I need people to come work at the golf course. Who do you have? You get free golf. It's a great perk. So the people that used to do that job, they loved it because it was free golf and it was an easy job. All you had to do was park golf carts. The only clubs that you had to clean and store were if people were staying at the resort on the quote golf package, then your clubs were stored for you every night. But I'm sitting there, and so essentially people did the job. They just sat there, and they used to like the morning shift because when people got there, they would load their bags onto a cart. Sometimes they got tips for that. But then at the end of the day, people are out there when they're done golfing, they drive to their car, they put them in their trunk, they bring the cart back, and all you got to do is park the cart. So nobody liked the afternoon shift because they like to work the morning, golf all afternoon because you got free golf. Well, and then the afternoon shift, all you did is sit around because people come off the 18th hole, drive to the parking lot, put their clubs away, and drop off the cart. All you got to do is park the golf cart. So it's an easy job. Just, this is 1989, 90, 91, 92. You're basically parking golf carts for $5.75 an hour, whatever was minimum wage back then. And but I'm sitting there doing nothing. I thought to myself, hey, these people are coming, getting done. So I started cleaning everybody's golf clubs when they came off the course. If they went right to their car, I'd walk, it's parked right behind the pro shop, walk there, clean their golf clubs as they were, changing their shoes, whatever. And then put their clubs in their trunk for them and then take the cart back so they didn't have to take the cart back. And I used to get, $1 a bag, $2 a bag. Some people would give me $5. That was like a big $5 tip, So all of a sudden I'm making $150 a day in tips working at the golf course. Plus $5.75 an hour. I mean, I've made bank, And so I was able to buy brand new vehicles and pay my way through college and do that. So I never had student. And then during the winter, I worked three jobs because during the winter, the golf course was closed. So I worked as a bellman, humping bags for tips, worked at the Lake Lawn Resort, worked at Grand Geneva Resort. And then I worked, I hung drywall. I also worked for Bauer Glass. I worked for Olson. I think it was Olson Temporary Services also. So during the winters, I worked my fucking ass off, three jobs and went to school. So yeah, I had no student debt. So I don't know how student debt works, but I think some student debt is held by government backed. Some is privately issued. I don't know. So these private banks, they're not going to just forgive the debt. Someone would have to pay off the bank loan. So I don't think it's a real serious thing. I think it's just dangled out there for young people to keep them voting Democrat, thinking, but it's something that Democrats would never really do. It'd be a terrible mistake to do it. I think it would, first off, it would drive, and I think it would further worthless dollars into the economy and drive up. I think we're going to see rampant inflation. I really do. But also, I think that it would, and I'll throw this in there too, not just paying off student debt, but these proposals, because now there's all these proposals, and Joe Biden even talked about it in his quote address to a joint session of Congress, which was just a joke this past. I don't know if you saw it on Well on Radio, MeWe page, the transcript, the new drinking game should be when Joe Biden gives us a speech or an address. Every time Joe Biden says, look, you got to take a drink. Trust me, you'll be hammered by the end of his speech. He's look, look, look. I mean, that was every other topic, every other sentence from Joe Biden. That's how he phrases it. It's as annoying as like my daughters when they say literally, because young people, they say literally when they don't really mean literally, because they think that it's an expression of not sincerity. Sincerity is not the word. An expression of it's a dramatic, you know, a dramatic precursor to what you're going to say. I literally had, you know, my hair was literally on fire when your hair wasn't literally on fire. I say it to my daughter all the time when she says, I was literally like going to kill myself. And I say, Kayla, you weren't literally going to kill yourself. If you were literally going to kill yourself, you were standing there with a knife in your hand, ready to slit your throat. If you were literally, you know, so, but that's what, when Joe Biden says, look, it's just that preface where he's trying to be dramatic. And I think it fails every time because it's so phony. But I think that the notion of free college, you know, 2 years of free community college, it's again, it's another bad idea because, well, what do we have problems with now? We can't get people into the trades. We can't get this notion that education should be free isn't good for anybody. This notion that anything that's free isn't good for anybody. Things that are free, people don't value. Things that are free become abused. Things that are free become, and again, nothing is free. So who's going to now, if college is quote free, then how are we going to fund all these schools? We've already got funding problems for schools. It just, every bit of it is just a terrible idea. And forgiving student loan debt, again, I don't think they would ever really do it. If they did do it, it would be terrible for the economy. It'd be terrible for this, again, supply and demand. If you start paying off everybody's student debt, that just may drive more people to take on more debt because they think they're going to get it forgiven. And so, besides the unfairness of it all, which I agree with you on that angle too, I don't think it's ever a serious proposal. I don't think Democrats would ever do it. I think they just keep dangling it to garner votes because I just can't imagine how they would actually do it. But again, taking it one step beyond that, even student loan debt, forget forgiving that because I don't think they really would. But this notion of free college, look, public education is a mess already. The last thing we want to do is make the free public. There's at least a modicum of accountability when you get to college and people have to pay for it. Start making that free and you're going to degrade the educational quality because if everybody can go for free, I mean, it's just going to be like high school where you've got a bunch of people there that don't belong there, a bunch of people there that, I mean, so yeah, it should be, you know, and I'm of the belief that, I mean, public education is irreparably broken and needs to be changed to a more capitalistic system, a more consumer driven system. The whole thing, terrible idea. So that's going to lead me into my last topic tonight. And I just wanted to hit this one real quick. So I think what America is really missing is an economics lesson. And I think when it comes to borrowing and deficit spending and all the government spending that the Democrats want to do, call it stimulus, call it infrastructure. And this is something, when I talk about this economics lesson, this is something that I think Republican talking heads need to pay attention to as well. But call it stimulus, call it infrastructure. This, again, borrowing, deficit spending, all the government spending that the Democrats want to do, that Joe Biden wants to do, whatever you want to call it. And again, to call it infrastructure, which is bullshit. And Republicans need to stop. I did this topic on this several weeks back on the show, maybe a month ago on the show. Republicans need to stop referring to bills and proposals by the newspeak propagandist labels that Democrats give them. The infrastructure bill should be referred to as, you know, the largest entitlement bill in the history of our country, just like the Equality Act that was in Congress should have been referred to as the Inequality Act, or better yet, the Racism Enforcement Act. Gun control bills or gun violence reduction bills, those should be referred to as crime stimulus bills. We conservatives need to stop letting the Democrat newspeak propaganda come out of our mouths because words matter. People hear it enough, and it's word association. I've done topics on this before on the show. So my first thing is, you know, don't spread propaganda. But in addition, when you use these accurate labels, Democrats' hair starts on fire. They go apeshit. Democrats can't handle the truth, and they sure hate it when Republicans grow balls and play offense because Democrats aren't used to it since most elected Republicans have no balls and have never played offense in public office in their life. So Democrats' hair starts on fire, and they feel compelled to have to explain themselves. They go on the defensive when we talk about this stuff, and that's our turf. When Democrats have to explain themselves, when we actually That's home field advantage for conservatives, because the truth, facts, is home field advantage for conservatives, because the facts are loaded up in our cannons, not theirs. They're shooting blanks. Once you get off the bumper sticker slogans and into a real debate, we win. Conservatives win. And we all know logic doesn't fit in a bumper sticker. Emotion does. So back to my point about deficit spending, borrowing, et cetera, Republicans need to drop the talking point. And you hear this all the time from Republicans. Republicans need to drop the talking point. Our kids and our grandkids are going to pay for all this borrowing, because that doesn't hook most people. And it's factually incomplete. Just like Democrats don't get mass buy-in with climate change stuff. You know, climate change is too abstract. It's too far in the future. Oh, the oceans are 0.1 degree warmer over the last 20 years. That just doesn't hit. It doesn't drive fear. I mean, let's face it. We're all a bit selfish. You know, selfishness is a core human instinct. It's mostly a vice, but something that we feel, but that we have to let our virtuous instincts overpower. It's just like jealousy. It's a vice, but it's kind of natural to feel. And that's actually a core of, you have to let your vices be stronger. You have to let your virtues be stronger than your vices. And that's actually a core of conservative politics and of freedom, because human nature is human nature. Human nature has vices and virtues, good and evil. And both are self-feeding. Both draw upon themselves and lead to a cycle of escalation. Vicious cycles, they spiral downwards. Virtuous cycles, they spiral upwards. You know, freedom and conservative principles, they leverage people's virtues, and virtue begets virtue, and success begets more success, and achievement begets more achievement. And you know, when people start achieving things, it motivates them. It makes them feel emboldened. They start achieving more. It feeds off itself. But the vices, they feed off themselves as well. Vices are the vicious cycles. You know, jealousy, if you don't process it and channel it, begets more jealousy. Entitlement begets more entitlement. If you get a bunch of stuff for free, you start to expect it. It's a vice, vicious cycle. So look at what the various political platforms leverage. And I submit that conservatism leverages people's virtues and liberalism leverages people's vices. Conservatism leverages optimism and self-reliance, and liberalism leverages pessimism and dependence. So this attempt by Democrats to scare people into submission, to control people by fear of global warming, you know, our Earth is going to destruct down the road if we don't do something, it's too abstract. Now, of course, it's factually ignorant, too. I mean, change is a constant. Many conservatives happen to believe that while we should be good stewards of the environment for today's enjoyment, thinking that we can affect the overall climate of the globe is kind of the height of secular arrogance. I mean, Democrats tried to control people with the fear of climate change, but again, too far off, too abstract. And a side note, that's the scary part of COVID, because that worked. Scaring people with climate change, trying to control every aspect of people's lives with climate change, only the lib voters fall for it. Scaring people they were going to die, that worked for the libs. Scaring people with climate change didn't work, because only the libs fell for it. But scaring people that they were going to die from coronavirus, that worked, because half of Republicans fell for the coronanoia last spring. But that's back to my point on Republicans trying to awaken people to the dangers of this government borrowing by saying your grandkids are going to pay for this. Again, that's partially true, but it's not complete, and it's not a hook. Because let's be real, not many people are all that motivated to act on their grandkids' finances. They just aren't. But Republican talking heads, they need to be able to explain the economics of this to people right now about how it affects people today. Because, again, people are, you know, a little bit more concerned. They're a little bit more selfish about things that are going to affect them than things that are going to affect their grandkids or their grandkids' grandkids. So this Republican thing that our grandkids' grandkids' grandkids are going to pay for this, most people don't give a shit, because it's their grandkids' grandkids' grandkids. Fine, let them pay for it. If we could have, you know, this, that, and the other thing today, great. So that's why Republicans need to – it's accurate to say that our grandkids' grandkids are going to be paying for this debt. But that's just not motivating. It's not enough of a hook. It's It's the equivalent of when Democrats try to scare people with global warming. It only works for for their segment of people. It doesn't have broad appeal. But the fact of the matter is all this government spending, it affects people right now. And we just need to be able to tell that story. The effect of injecting money into the system, like they're doing right now, raises prices today. Borrowed money results in prices going up. Money injected without value created devalues the dollar. Have you ever heard someone say, you just can't afford to support a family even working full time in a low skill job? This is why when you hear people say, yeah, you just can't make it as a family anymore off of, you know, the reason why is because of the devaluing of the dollar that's done by all the government spending, all the borrowing, all the deficit spending. That devalues the dollar. It drives inflation. So even if you had a magic wand, if you could just add a zero to everyone's bank account, every business, every individual, just put a zero on their bank balance, you haven't created value. Nothing of real value exists. The same amount of goods and services exist. The same amount of real assets exist, but there's more money out there to buy them. And that just drives prices up. Again, this is an economics, you know, if you study economics, you'll go through the methodology of this. But of course, when the government prints money, that's not what happens. Not everyone gets the same infusion of money. So there's more money out there driving up the cost of products just because there's more money chasing the same products, but your income necessarily didn't go up. Maybe you didn't get the influx of money to correspond to the increasing in prices. But here's the double whammy. In order to pay for the increased spending, in order to try not to borrow as much and pay the debt service on the money they've borrowed from China, because China buys treasury bills. If China stopped buying the debt from the United States, when we issue debt to pay for all this stuff, all the borrowing, all the programs, if they stopped, we couldn't borrow more money like we have been. But if you increase taxes, even just on corporations to pay for the spending, let's say you stop borrowing from China, which devalues the dollar and puts more money into circulation and drives up costs, which is, again, the reason why a low-skill labor job can't buy a house in the suburbs and a car in the driveway and a wife that stays home with the kids like it used to in the 50s. It's because of government fiscal policy that drives up costs without driving up wages. Because here's another fact. Here's another truism. Even if you just raise taxes on corporations to pay for the spending, the cost of raising taxes on corporations is borne by the consumer as well. You don't get to stick it to these rich corporations. That's what people need to realize. Raising taxes, there's no such thing as just raising taxes on corporations. When Joe Biden says corporations aren't paying their fair share, every time he says that, people should know that that means that you're not. Taxes are just an expense for businesses. If you raise, now we also have to remind people that when you raise taxes, you suppress economic activity. Businesses have less to invest. The economy grows less robust, and it actually drags down tax collections. When you reduce taxes, businesses have more money. They invest more money. They create more value. People have more purchasing power. They spend more. They buy more. They earn more. Virtuous cycle, and tax collections go up by lowering taxes. We've recognized this. And the truth is, I think Democrats realize it too. I think Democrats can't be so economically stupid to not realize that raising taxes suppresses economic growth, and raising taxes actually reduces tax collections. But Democrats play that. They want to, just like the Democrats want to suppress the economy with all these environmental measures to slow growth, I think Democrats intentionally want to raise taxes to retard economic growth because that increases the power of the government. You can't have all these corporations, all these people getting wealthy and wealthy. They want the government to be the one in power. They want the government to be the one that's wealthy. So I think that because I'm, you know, when I was younger, I thought, man, Democrats, if they just understood economics, like the ones in power, the ones elected, I think Democrats realize, Joe Biden, I think, realizes that well, Barack Obama, who's calling the shots, realizes that raising taxes is actually, if they wanted more tax revenue, they should lower taxes. But the Democrats don't want that because that would grow the private sector. And that's what they're trying. They recognize it's just like gun control isn't about crime. Raising taxes isn't about raising revenue. It's about suppressing the private sector. You've got to really understand what the Democrats are really trying to do here. They know the big picture. But economics lesson, taxes are an expense for businesses. Do you think CEOs will say, well, fuck it, they raised our corporate taxes, let's just pay me less and keep our prices the same? No. Companies raise their taxes to pay their increased tax burden. Cost of a car, maybe it goes up $500 as a result of increased taxes, probably more. But the cost of a candy bar, up 3 cents per candy bar. The cost of a gallon of gas, up 30 cents. I mean, literally everything you buy, the cost goes up because the companies raised their prices. Every company along that supply chain, whether it was the one that produced the gas, the one that delivered the gas, the one that made the trucks that the person who delivers the gas bought, all their taxes go up. They all increase their costs. It drives up costs, and that all gets passed on to the consumer. It's basic economics. So the rich didn't pay, quote, their fair share. You, the consumer, paid their fair share because corporations get their revenue from their customers. That's you, the consumer. Add up the effect that increases in the corporate tax rate had on all your purchases. Maybe it's $20 a week for you. Maybe it's $80 a week. Maybe it's $80 a month, $960 a year. You know, perhaps $1,000 a year you pay in higher taxes. But Joe Biden said if you don't make more than $400,000 a year, you won't pay a penny more in taxes. Well, you may not pay a penny more in taxes, but you'll pay thousands more in the cost of the products and services you buy. And it's across the board. Every company's taxes are going up, so they all will be increasing prices. There's no hesitation to increase prices because they know every other company is increasing theirs. Coke's corporate taxes go up. Coke knows that Pepsi's corporate taxes go up too. Ford taxes go up. They know Chevy's taxes are going up too. They're both going to increase their prices because they know their competitors are getting the same tax increases that they are. And how about wages? Remember when the tax cut went through, Trump's tax cuts? Remember how every company was hiring, couldn't find enough workers. Every company wanted to keep employees happy because there were so many available jobs due to Trump's roaring economy. When Trump's tax cuts went through that year, they gave bonuses. Remember that? You heard about it like every other day in the news, big company, across the board bonuses, $2,000 bonuses to every employee. We saw it daily, weekly on the news, every day, every week, another company giving bonuses. Taxes went down and companies shoved the money into employee compensation. What do you think companies are going to do when their taxes go up? Give bonuses? Not a fucking chance. They're going to pause wage increases, pause hiring. We can't give bonuses this year due to increased tax costs. And this is going to happen in short order. It's not the prices your grandkids pay. It's not the prices your grandkids' grandkids pay for stuff. The prices you will pay in the course of a few months, a year, as the cost of corporate taxes gets passed through in the form of higher prices, then when you want to know why a 40-hour low-skilled job can't support a family, don't blame anyone but politicians whose policies drive up costs. So again, it's a mistake for Republicans to parse this. And I know you guys have heard it. You've heard it over and over. Republicans on TV, our kids and grandkids and grandkids' grandkids are going to be paying for this. That doesn't hook people. Republicans should be saying it's you paying for this. The lower class, this is going to drive up your costs. When you in a low-skill, full-time job can't support a family, a car, and a wife who stays home with the kids, it's because of this kind of stuff. Another thing, Joe Biden's class warfare. Joe Biden's class warfare, in his presentation, he said the net worth of billionaires went up $4 trillion. Again, such phony math. That wasn't real money in the bank for these billionaires. Net worth is just a theoretical value that Forbes calculates on billionaires. You know, cash on hand, money in the bank, that's only a fraction, a tiny fraction of these billionaires' total net worth. So if Jeff Bezos' net worth went up $20 billion last year, you can't, because that's what Biden's thing was. Oh, the rich are doing, the rich did great under Corona. You know, you suffered, but the rich got richer. The billionaires total net worth of the billionaires went up $4 trillion. If Jeff Bezos' net worth went up $20 billion last year, you can't tax Jeff Bezos based on his net worth. You can't say, okay, Jeff Bezos, 40% of $20 billion, pay us $8 billion. Jeff Bezos couldn't do it. Jeff Bezos didn't take in $8 billion in income. His net worth rose $8 billion, but he didn't take in $8 billion. If you tax people's net worth and their net worth goes up, Jeff Bezos would have to sell a whole bunch of the stock of Amazon to come up with that $8 billion. And selling that much stock would probably cause the stock price to drop, and suddenly his net worth could drop by $10 billion in a day. It's phony class warfare bullshit. If a carpenter gets laid off and he had $300,000 in the bank, and he spends all that money on the lumber and materials, and he builds himself a mansion on a lake, does all the work himself. Now he's got no money in the bank, but he's got a mansion on the lake. Now he has no income, but his house is certainly worth more than $300,000 because he put his labor into it and stuff. Maybe this house that he built is worth $1.5 million. So that carpenter's net worth went from $300,000 because he had that in the bank to $1.5 million because he created value. But you can't say, oh, your net worth went up $1.2 million. We're going to tax 40% of that. Pay up $480,000, Mr. Carpenter. It's not possible. He doesn't have the money. So you can't tax people when their net worth goes up because that's just on paper. You can't tax that. So that's why when Joe Biden brought that up in his speech, it was just such a phony class warfare bullshit. It should be, I mean, and the fact that people don't realize that and just how shameful that is for him to do. I mean, it's pathetic. But anyway, that's the show for tonight. No live listeners tonight. It's probably because I put this, you know, and I'm not going to lie. I have so few live listeners. Most people just catch the podcast at some other point. So I have so few live listeners that I get really lax about, and I should get better with that because I would like more live listeners, but I get really lax about scheduling the show ahead of time and being regular with my start time, you know, like at 8:30, because with only a couple live listeners, I know it doesn't matter to most of my listeners when I actually start the show. So like tonight I was out golfing and got home late. Threw a sandwich on the George Foreman and grilled that up and ate it. And, rushed to get the show started, which ended up being about 10 minutes late. So anyway, you guys have a great week. Feel free to send me emails, feedback. I'll say this. When people send me emails, look, I ask for criticism. You're more than welcome to criticize me. More than welcome to tell me what you would do differently. More than welcome to tell me how you disagree with me. One thing I don't like people to do is when, like, people boss me around. Like, this, I hate it when people tell me what I should do. Like, no, I'm a free person. I'll do what I want to do. Tell me what you would do. Like, this person who was taking issue with my fascist book characterization. Like, it drives me nuts when people tell me what to do, try to boss me around. Tell me what you would do. Tell me why you disagree with what I'm doing. But when you say, you know, that I should do this, or I should, like, that's, I'll never ask people, I've never said to people, hey, please tell me what to do, please tell me how to do my show. You know, criticize me if you don't like something, this topic was boring, this topic was good, love it. I got some feedback from someone last week, they said, hey, it's really distracting when you run through a topic, and then someone pops in the chat, and you say hi to them. And I was like, yeah, that's a good point, I didn't realize that. I still want to acknowledge people when they join the chat, but, I talked too long. My bumper music is done. So, but anyway, send me feedback. I love criticism. Well, I don't love criticism. I'll entertain criticism. I'll entertain suggestions. But, don't tell me what to do. Tell me what you would do. Tell me what you do differently. Have a great week. Carry on. Be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio. And I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.